Hey, it's Brother One.
And Brother Two.
From Two Brothers Mattress.
Don't miss our huge Memorial Day sale. Going on now on all Tempur-Pedic mattresses.
Save up to $500 on Tempur-Pedic mattresses.
Visit one of our five stores or twobrothersmattress.com.
Imagine Dragons. Loom. World Tour. Live in Salt Lake City. Utah First Credit Union Amphitheater. Friday, October 11th. The brand new album, Loom, is available everywhere June 28th. Get tickets now at Ticketmaster.com. For more, visit ImagineDragonsMusic.com.
Welcome to another episode of Relentlessly Resilient, where real people share real life experiences and the tools they've developed to move forward and live their best life. I am Michelle Scharf.
And I am Jenny Taylor. And today we have a guest who is another widow, even though we try not to do only widow shows. Today is a widow show. And we've got Lisa Valentine Clark. Lisa, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, many of you will recognize Lisa either by her voice or if you see her pictures as we post this podcast on our social media pages, because she's an actress, she's got her own podcast, she is one of my quiet mentors she doesn't even know. But we're grateful to have you here to share this journey that has brought you to widowhood through the terrible disease that is ALS. And we're so sorry for the loss of your husband and the dreams and the years that you would have had together through that terrible disease. I think all of us in this room and many of us listening know someone that has lost that battle to just a terrible, terrible illness that is ALS. But we would love for you to back up before the sadness, before this grief journey, and just introduce yourself and your husband to us. How did you meet? How did you come together? These two vibrant personalities that have blessed so many other lives through your own talents. I know you have children together and this wonderful, beautiful, messy life. Can you just give us a little bit of your backstory?
Yeah, you bet. I was raised in Lincoln, Nebraska, came out to college at Brigham Young University, like many people do. My husband had just returned home from an LDS mission in Finland, and we met soon after he got home. He was on an acting scholarship at BYU, but decided to be an English major because it was more practical. Which
was that his
now.
Idea or his parents' idea?
I think just, you know, the idea of what is life, and I should probably get serious,
how can I
make a living? You know, he loved Shakespeare and acting, and he just thought, you know, how am I going to make a living on this? I similarly was like trying to figure out, I was interested in so many things, but I just loved all of my English classes. And I just wanted to read books and talk about them. And I just thought, oh, that's a major? Okay, let's do that. And the English Society,
I love that.
The English Society was putting on a play. So, you know, I was acting on the side, Christopher was acting on the side. So we were like, English majors putting on a play. Well, this is for us. And so we met at an audition for this English Society play, and he got the coveted role of Satan. I mean, who doesn't want to play that juicy role? And I got cast as a chicken on Noah's Ark. And you may have missed that in
wow.
the scriptures, but
wow.
but it was really a pivotal role for Noah and his family, let me tell you. It was the most ridiculous production. It really was, because it was meant to be taken seriously, and we did not.
And you could
you know,
not.
And yeah. And we just had so much fun at this play. And so that's when I had known one of his best friends, who also was in the play, as his friend Jay, who played King Herod very comically, which, again, another bold choice. We made a lot of bold choices during that play. But the three of us just decided just to kind of hang out. These guys were so funny. And that's how we met. And then you fast forward a couple of years and sort of ditched the friend, and we fell in love.
And, no more King Herod?
Yeah, sorry. And, we were married in 1995, and just, I mean, we had no money and lots of hopes and dreams. just had a great life together. I remember we joked, you know, our first year anniversary, Christopher gave me daisies and said, you know, we're too poor for roses. So sorry for that. But like, oh, we were just making fun of how everyone was like, you know, the first year is the hardest. We looked at each other and he, with his daisies, said, this has been the best first year. What are you talking about?
Oh, that's beautiful.
And that was just kind of like how our marriage was. I mean, yes, did we have hard times? Yeah, probably sure. More than most, but that didn't come until later. And Christopher got a master's in staging Shakespeare and a PhD in theater and education leadership. And through a lot of training at the Old Globe, training at Second City and Steppenwolf and a bunch of other work. If you were into acting, you'd be like, wow, that's a lot of training.
No kidding. Over
the world.
And well, you don't hear of a lot of performers with a PhD in it. I mean, it's one thing to study it and then get a role and run with the profession, but that's the academic side as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, he just led an incredible life. And early on in our marriage, you know, he had a job in retail and he looked at me. We had two little boys by then and just said, you know, I just don't feel like I'm doing what I'm, you know, love and what I was meant to do. And we packed up and we moved to England to get that master's
in
staging Shakespeare and never looked back. And yeah, and it was the best thing that we really felt guided spiritually to do it. We really felt excited for it. And that's just kind of how it's like, you want to do this crazy thing? Yeah, let's do it. And then we just thought
he really,
and we made it work.
Yeah.
And he was like, you know, if I have to be an adjunct professor, or if I have to teach and stuff in order to be able to direct theater, which is really, really what my love and passion is, I'm going to do it. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. You know,
I love that you supported him in that.
Oh, well, you know, because I supported me in the things that I wanted to do. So I graduated with that degree in English. I taught high school for a little bit, and then I taught some online courses back in the early days of the internet. You know,
not,
when you were
not COVID learning when everyone, sure. That's impressive.
Yes,
you were the trailblazer.
You know, listen, I tell my kids I was grandma of the internet teaching. They're like, yeah, okay, mom, whatever. A prophet in my own country. And, you know, I wanted to have a bunch of kids. I wanted a loud, happy house full of like art and being able to do interesting projects. And luckily, Chris and I wanted the same things, right? And we worked for him. So he wanted to direct theater. I wanted to act. I started doing like voiceovers. We had five kids in there.
How in the world? No kidding.
I don't know.
Are your kids all as...
We love it.
Are your kids performers? Are they vivacious? Do you just like sit and laugh all day, every day as each other's like taking on whatever role of the chicken?
Yes, at my kids. They're all very, very different. So we had five kids and I've done a lot of acting and things like that, but I have one son who is really into like filmmaking. He's just made some student films that won some award and he wants to act, you know, like his dad. And I have a son who is an English major. It was really, really hard for him to come out to us. And because we were like, no,
don't do it.
Anything. But
the grammar police in that house must be
terrible.
If there's any
you're just going to have to love me how I am. I like reading books, okay?
You can major in that? I didn't know. I love that.
So I've been sitting here.
Japanese. Mm-hmm.
So I've been sitting here as you're talking, and I'm a little bit distracted, I'll be honest. I've been going through your Facebook page, and I found a picture of your husband in 2019. Clearly on a set. What movie was that? Or what play was that?
In 2019? So he was hired to be Paul in the Bible.org videos
The
Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints did. So, you know, he was diagnosed with ALS in 2016. So by 2019, they had done all the videos, like they had filmed them over in, you know, Italy and in Goshen, Utah. And so the bulk of all of that had been done before his diagnosis. But after, in 2019, once he'd been living with it for a few years, they needed to do some more stills. They needed some photos that they were going to do and put into the different MTCs and for other materials. And he said to them, you know, I don't know. I have this disease and I can't like walk and control my muscles and stuff. And they were like, well, let's just see what we can do. And he actually had a really like a powerful experience being on set to be able to get those shots and those stills. So those pictures mean a lot to us personally as a family.
Yeah, I imagine they do. I'm listening to your story and I hear the love and excitement of you talking about him, and I see these photos and it's so clear the absolute love that you had for one another.
Yeah, we had a great, beautiful. We had great marriage, a great life together.
And those five kids, yeah. So you've got the two sons, one in filmmaking, one in English major. What's the rest of the breakdown of your kiddos?
Yeah, you bet. And then my second child just got accepted to a BFA and is a visual artist and is such a hard worker. And then our daughter is in home MTC right now and is getting ready to go on a mission to
exciting.
El Salvador. Yeah, in like a week. And then our youngest is in middle school and likes to perform reluctantly.
That's
the best way to... likes it.
But she likes it. Okay, you can reluctantly like something if you're in a family full of artists.
I can't be the stage mom. I know I was meant to be. Is what I'm trying to say.
I think
she won't let me reach my full potential.
Yeah. Yeah. She's holding you back.
She tells me to back off. Yeah, she's holding me back.
That is so great. All right, so you've got this beautiful life. You've met. You've been married since the mid-90s. You're somehow living this amazing dream. You know, a lot of people with a lot of artistic talent do not find a path that works for them to make a career out of it and have a family and stay married and stay happy and stay all of these beautiful things that it sounds like you and your husband were able to do. We're going to take a quick break and come back, and we want you to walk us through this journey, the health journey, the looking for the diagnosis, everything. How did you know? When did you know? How did that all begin with Chris? We'll be right back.
If you are looking for the warmest, softest blanket to cuddle up by the fire, you should consider Minky Couture.
We are so pleased to have Minky Couture as a sponsor of our show, Relentlessly Resilient. With the most indulgent and highest quality you'll ever find, we know you will love them just as much as we do.
I have over a dozen.
And I have one in each of mine and my kids' rooms, but I also give them out as gifts all the time.
Seriously, it's like giving somebody a hug that they can have anytime they need one.
What I love about Minky Couture is there's not just one style of amazing blanket, there are several. You have the kind of stretchy, the big, the little, the thicker, the thinner. You can have it with the satiny edges or just the soft middle. Whichever type of cuddle up you enjoy the most, they have one for you, and you can check them all out in their stores. There are six of them here in Utah.
Treat yourself or a loved one to the gift of comfort today. Visit them in store or online at minkycouture.com.
All right, Lisa, so you've got these five beautiful kids. What year was your youngest born? I'm trying to do some basic math here.
2008.
Okay, so 2008, you've got your last baby. You're acting, your husband's directing, you're, by all intents and purposes, living the dream. Sounds like a great family
dream,
life.
Sure. Yes.
Well, would anybody really want to live the dream? I know. So tell us what happened with Chris with his health. What were some of the early warning signs, and what was that process of looking for and then finally finding his ALS diagnosis?
Well, he'd always been really huffy. He had a back surgery in his 20s that was kind of a genetic, like all of his aunts and uncles needed this back surgery, and was just fine. And at just like the height of his health, and I had finished having my last baby and we're building our careers and our family. And as we like to say, like just hustling, right? Like he knew that if he wanted to be a theater director and support a family, and if I wanted to raise five kids and have my pursuits, we knew we both would, you know, work hard. And,
yeah.
And so I think we sort of thought, oh, we can work our way out of this, you know, to kind of like get little gigs here and there to piece together and then think about putting them all through college later. Right.
So they can
listen,
all go.
You never know. And it was really great. And then in 2016, he noticed a slight drag in his leg. And kind of had mentioned something to it of like, oh, I just wonder if like, I just can't shake it. It's kind of weird. And I thought, that's weird. You know, like drink a glass of water, take an ibuprofen,
sure.
You're fine.
Shake it
you
off,
know,
let's go back to work.
Exactly. Like, weird. And then it didn't go away and didn't go away. And then he was kind of limping a little bit. And he said, you know, the weirdest thing was happening. I wanted to cross the street and it took my brain like a full second, which is kind of a long time to get it to move. And I was like, ooh, that's, maybe you have a pinched nerve. Maybe it's, you know, you're back again. And that's kind of what we thought. So we made some appointments to get an MRI. And and a checkup, and it was totally clean and normal. And we were like, that's weird. And that was kind of the holidays and things like that. And then when he got another MRI and it was higher up in his neck, then people got really concerned because they're like, you are having, it's getting worse and we see nothing. So then there was an intense period of about 3 to 4 months where they were testing for everything because no one even suggests or tests for ALS until they've ruled out like 100 different other things. And it's at the bottom of the list, right? They don't even say it out loud until it's like a confirmed diagnosis. No. I mean, and of course I went on WebMD like any person and Googled the symptoms and ALS came up and I was like, well, it's not that. Like, of course not.
Yeah.
And
it's got to be
my brother
else.
and my sister-in-law are both physicians, and they were like, "Yeah, don't go on WebMD.
Stay off the internet."
Right. And so after they ruled out cancer and leukemia and MS and a brain tumor, I mean, they were testing for everything, and
we
just didn't tell anyone, and it was just a sickening way to live. And
so, Lisa,
you know,
can I ask a question that might feel insensitive because of the emotional of everything. How did you pay for this? Did you guys have health benefits in your performing world? Because all of these tests are horrendously expensive.
Oh,
and
totally.
If they're not giving answers, you just need more tests. Are you getting buried under medical bills at the same time?
Well, because of our desire to sort of like hustle and be able to, you know, support a family, and it was always really important for us to have insurance, and boy, did that pay off.
Okay.
And we always felt very, very strongly about that.
Okay.
We always had health insurance, always, always. And he was a tenured professor at this time at Utah Valley University.
Okay.
Pretty much for the benefits.
Sure.
Again, which totally
paid
off for us.
You're not going to get them through side gigs and acting and things. That's...
No, heavens,
okay,
no.
Okay, sorry.
And I know people who,
could you pay your bills? I mean, I know your husband's dealing with his health, but holy cow, are you also, because money can't solve problems, but lack of the necessary money
can
exaggerate every problem.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. Well, and I remember going in for the MRI going, oh, great. We haven't met our deductible. Like, where are we going to come up with $1,200? I mean, I did
for
think
for one
that.
Of
like,
the tests. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because I was like, okay, so like if I do that gig, if I do that voiceover thing, then that should pay for the deductible. So I think we'll be okay. But then holidays, and do I have money saved?
Yeah.
And I remember one time he was doing a test because they wanted to make sure he didn't have a brain tumor. Right.
Okay.
And I was like, here's where we were with that. At that moment, I was like, we were hoping it was a brain tumor because at least you can operate on a brain tumor.
Right.
And I was driving my dented Dodge Grand Caravan and I remember it was kind of lurching and we'd had it forever. Like it had had like 200,000 miles on it. And I remember thinking it was like kind of doing this weird thing. And I remember like praying, like, I can't have the transmission go out in this car and my husband be diagnosed with a brain tumor in the same week.
Yeah,
I can't handle
separate
it.
Those two things.
And I remember the car made it that week.
Oh, Lisa.
Like barely. And then it was, he doesn't have a brain tumor. And we were like, oh crap, he doesn't
now
have
what?
A brain tumor. What is, So finally in the end of March of 2016, he was referred very unceremoniously, you know, like it's scribbled on a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Hey, go to this clinic and he can read diagnosis ALS. And he's like, wait, nobody sat and told me this, but go to this specialist up at the University of Utah. Oh yeah. It was just like so poorly handled, but you know, in a doctor's defense, no one wants to tell anybody, like, you know, you're going to be
specialists
that don't know
you.
I'm not going to tell you. Yeah. You go and Google it in your car and cry, you know, like not in my office. So he went up to the specialist who confirmed, yes, this is what it is. And our lives just were never the same. Everything was different. And, you know, by then he was walking with a cane and it got kind of, you know, difficult to walk. So everyone was like, what's going on? What's the matter? You know?
Yeah.
And we had to tell, you know, our kids who at the time were 8 to 18, you know, 5 in there, and tell our parents and our friends. And that was probably the worst. One of the worst experiences of my life is telling our loved ones.
So for those that don't know, tell us what ALS is. It's commonly referred to as ALS, but it's Lou Gehrig's disease, and there's a bigger word for it. And then kind of explain what that means when you get that diagnosis.
When you get the diagnosis ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, the average life expectancy is 2 to 5 years.
Oh,
so it is
gosh.
A terminal disease that has no treatment to slow it down, no cure, of course, and a lack of fundraising. So I call it the worst. It's like the worst of the worst diseases. There's not a lot of awareness about it. You know, it's still like in 100 years since like when Derek got it. And he was a baseball player who famously said, you know, I just feel like because of my family and friends, the luckiest guy in the whole world, and then quietly died from it. I mean, we really haven't made huge breakthroughs in it. And, you know, I thought, oh, I'm going to out research this and out study it. And if anybody is have lived a charmed life and has had unexpected, funny and awesome things happen to him, it's Chris Clark. So yeah, maybe there'll be a cure. You know, maybe we're the ones.
And he'll be the one to break it through. Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that got us through that first year, right? Of all the shock and the trauma.
How old are both of you at the time of diagnosis? Yeah.
Let's see. So at the time of diagnosis, Christopher was 42, almost 43.
Okay.
Yeah. So our lives were never the same. And for 4.5 years, I tried to stay ahead of the disease for him. I tried to make him comfortable. And we went through every imaginable change, like emotionally, spiritually, physically, with our house, with our friendships, with our relationships, with our jobs, with everything. Everything changed. Every little detail of our lives changed in kind of dramatic ways. So from diagnosis, he could walk and talk and move and express himself. And by the time he passed away 4.5 years later, he couldn't move or speak or really swallow. And so it was quite a dramatic time of life and an intensity for sure. And then throw in a global pandemic in there at the end.
Well, and 5 kids, like you said, your youngest daughter was still so young and your oldest child wasn't old. By any means.
No. No, I remember looking at him and thinking, well, my oldest is 18, so one of my kids got a carefree childhood.
A childhood.
Great.
Yeah. One out of five. That's
one of them
got it. Terrible statistic.
One out of five.
That's a terrible statistic, Lisa.
Yeah, I hated it. I hated it. We didn't want this for our kids, you know?
Right.
And you're powerless to it. And then, you know, you're over.
Is there testing so you know in advance of symptoms?
No. And in fact, that's one of the other cruel things about this horrible disease is that progression for everyone is that not only on a different rate, but at a different progressive. So we met people who it started in their legs, like Christopher, some who it started in their voice, some who started in their arms, some who passed away being able to talk, some passed away being able to walk, or some like Christopher not being able to do any of it. So there was no way to, we'd go to the specialists and say, okay, so you've seen lots of people with ALS. Which one
What's
do we
next?
Have?
Yeah.
How fast is this going to go? What's next? What can we expect in the next 3 months? And they can never, ever tell you. They just say, what can we do to help you right now to make you comfortable
to be
right
as comfortable
now?
As
Should
possible.
We Google shower chairs? And I'm like, what? We're Googling shower? What? Like, no, what? Like it just, I was... It's the most frustrating feeling.
So, Lisa, what was that like for you? Take us inside your head for a minute. You're the wife, you're the mom, you're now the caretaker. Again, back to the finances, not to be cold-hearted, but somebody's got to pay some bills somewhere. I imagine you can't work a lot while you're caring for him. He's not able to work, or is he? What kept you afloat? What was your kind of personal go-to during the depth of his decline, before you lost him, but as you can realize you are losing him?
Oh, it was just horrible, the most lonely, like desperate feeling ever. And I just was so glad that I had already had a very well-established like spiritual identity. I knew that I have a loving Heavenly Father that I could pray to and plead for, and that's where I went. And I just thought, okay, so if this is my life's plan, you know, you can hear the resentment in my
love
butt.
It. Like, mm-hmm. Let's make a movie out of it.
Know,
sounds great.
Then what do I do now? Because my whole thing was we had worked really hard for this life. We knew that we had created together and we loved it. You know what I mean? We had made certain sacrifices and saying, you know what? We might not be very rich, but we don't care. We want lots of kids. We want to live creative, like fun.
You're
going to
live a fulfilling life that taps into your potential.
And we know you don't get everything in life. And so we're going to make sacrifices to kind of get what we want. And then everything was just done. It was like it was all laid out on a table and we're working towards this and then this and this, and we're being responsible and planning, you know, our future, and we'll work hard now and then we'll be able to do this in the future and help other people in this. And we had it all nicely laid out. And then it's like the table was tipped over and everything was just knocked off.
Just
and it was like, I was on the ground saying, okay, well, what do I even pick up and put up on the table? Like, why would I do this? Like, why make plans then? What does life mean? Like, it was like, okay, this is, and Christopher had such a great attitude of, I mean, he went to a really good therapist who was like, you know, take 10 to 15 minutes to feel sorry for yourself every day because you have every reason to. Like, this is literally the worst thing. And, you know, you're going to be slowly trapped into your body. And this is awful. And and he just saw how hard I had to work, and he felt so guilty. And I was like, no, we're not doing that to each other. You know,
we're in this together.
You were a great husband. There's no guilt. We're doing it together. And after about the first year, he just had this attitude of, this was God's plan for me, so I'm just going to enjoy it. I'm not going to waste time thinking about the things I can't do anymore. Like, I can't play the piano anymore. Okay, fine, then I'll still direct. When he lost his voice and he was like, okay, well, I'll teach until, and Utah Valley University and his colleagues couldn't have been better. And like, whatever you need, if you need to start meetings late in the morning because it took so long for him to get up and get going, you know, and all that kind of stuff, they're like, great. You can teach or not teach whatever classes you want. We're going to accommodate. What kind of adaptive equipment do you need from the university? We've got you covered.
Wow.
And they were great. And
that's
that helped his mental state of being, because he was able to work for a long time, which gave him a sense of purpose. And then he said, you know, when I lost my voice, then I'm going to stay home, and then I'll get an assistant director and still direct. And, you know, the Hale Center Theater, where he would direct, was like, great, we'll take you for whatever you want to do. And they just accommodated him, and it gave him a sense of purpose. And when he passed away, you know, he couldn't move or talk, and he was writing plays, and he was in pre-production for a show as a producer, you know, for UVU. And he didn't finish those things, but that's how he wanted to die. He wanted to die having, like, I've got to get up, Lisa. I've got a production meeting at, like, you know, 2 p.m. And I'd be like, oh. You don't need to go to this
You got a pretty good excuse to miss
the
meeting.
You're really tired and you're having seizures. And so I think they'll understand. He's like, nope, this is how I live. I live until the end. And he did. And, you know, 2 days before he passed away, you know, he planned an elaborate surprise for our 25th wedding anniversary with a chef and a musician and jewelry. And, like, I was like, what are you doing? You have, like, 20 good minutes a day. And he's like, this is how we live. This is how I, you know. And anyway, it was very, very touching. And to kind of go back to your earlier question, like, that's how we lived. And he didn't worry about things will work out. If this was meant to be for us, then the Lord's going to provide. And we have done the very best we can. Like, we're not going to be destitute. And we had good friends that did fundraisers for us to help to buy some adaptive equipment that's not covered by insurance.
Right.
We had really great insurance, and most of the stuff is just not covered by insurance. That, you know, it's one of those horrible diseases. In fact, it's estimated from the National ALS Association that it costs about $225,000 a year.
To have ALS.
To keep a person, to have ALS. We lived in a split level house. And the first thing, my sister, who was just an angel, came down and was like, and my parents were like, you can't live in this house. Look at all these stairs. Like, he's going to be in a wheelchair before you know it. And I was still in shock. And I just didn't know what was going on. And my sister was like, are you going to move or are you going to stay here? And I was like, well, I'm not uprooting my kids.
Right.
You know, like, they're in a neighborhood they love with friends and a church community.
They need something stable in their life. Yep.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And we both felt so strongly about that. And then so my sister was like, well, then we're building an addition on your house so that it'll be handicap accessible.
So you could stay put, but still accommodate.
Yeah. And so we just started it. We had people in our ward family, in our church community, who were like, okay, we'll help, you know, who were contractors, and a former bishop who was just like pacing outside my house and was like, I have to help. And we were like, you know, you just feel so humbled by the whole thing. I have and I'm kind of embarrassed to say that I realize that not everybody has these kinds of resources, but I have a brother who's quite famous and well to do, and he flew in and just was gutted by the news and said, listen, I'm going on tour and I'm not going to be able to be here, like, boots on the ground, like, day to day, just with my career and things, but I want to help. And offered to help us pay for the, you know, addition, to help us pay for a handicap.
Bless him.
You know,
I love that.
Accessible van. And we just cried together. And I said, I don't want this to change, you know, our relationship. We don't treat each other. And he's like, you know, Chris is my brother too. And isn't this what it's all for? And was such, I'll never forget. And I love to say that because, like, not all of my siblings had that kind of money, but they gave what they could.
Right.
I have a brother who is a physician who just walked us through, like, the most horrible, held my hand
medical side
through all the medical side. And I have a sister who just can do anything. And she basically quit her job to help oversee the, you know, construction of this because we needed it yesterday.
Right, right. You know, you're not waiting the normal 6 to 9, yes. 12 months to build something.
And she and her husband just wrapped their arms around my kids, too, you know, to be like, we got you. Like, this is going to get hard and you've got this, you know, and I have sister-in-laws who are just there dropping things off and like, I'm here to run kids around. I'm here to, you know,
yeah.
And so the community came together and it was such an outpouring of love when you're so desperately needed. And for me, it was really embarrassing because I like to be the helper and not the one who, I mean, I needed help with everything.
Yeah.
And it was so humbling. And I remember right before Chris died, he said, you know, it's too bad I'm dying. Yeah. I was like, oh, really, honey? Why is that today?
Say more.
And he's like, I just see how wonderful people have served us. And he's like, and now I get it. And now I know how to do it. And I'm like,
wow.
Dying. And he goes, he's like, you know, we had friends that would make him laugh and put on this big benefit concert and did Xanadu because it was the most stupid, ridiculous show ever done. And people would buy tickets. And during the pandemic, people would entertain him in front of our windows. He's like, I'm going to sit outside in my house, isolated from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. Those are my good hours. So feel free to come and entertain me. I mean, this is my husband, right? And people did. And they would read books to him. They would do lip syncs for him. They would just entertain him. And I would just have to excuse myself and go into my bedroom and cry because I felt so much love
right
at a time when we needed to be isolated from everyone.
I cannot
And I know I'm just
isolation.
Like babbling on and
no,
on.
No, no,
but I feel like I want to share it with the world because some people will be like, oh, it must be nice. We can all do something. We can all give in like a specific way. And I will never like, I don't pass up like GoFundMes yeah. on Facebook anymore. I used
Isn't
to be
it
like,
funny
oh,
how
know
it changes your perspective?
Now, yes, from my yep. perspective, I'm like $10 from a stranger. Mm-hmm. It gives you a, yep. a bar that yep. you need in a shower. Yep, yep. Got it. I'll do it. I'd love to give
and
you
I,
you know, like it changes the way you see the world.
I love what you said, that everyone can bring what they can bring. You know, your brother that had yeah. financial resources to say, I'm going to help pay the bill on some construction, or your sister that was able to leave her job and give of her time, or your community
yeah.
members that could pitch in. That you've hit on so many amazing things of what lets us be resilient. We're able to be more resilient when we're surrounded by people who help us be resilient, right? And it's not just
yeah.
this, even though you were physically isolated by the pandemic. I love that your husband would call people and say, hey, come entertain me. He was willing to acknowledge what he needed to keep his head as afloat as possible. And mm-hmm. And, you know, so often I think people are so willing to help all of us. We're just not very good at letting people help. And
no.
sometimes the
and
most.
He, yes. I just feel like he gave people permission. He would ask them, you know, if somebody would say, what can I do for you, man? You know, like
yeah.
I would, you know, and he'd say something like, you know, make my kids laugh or be take care of Lisa or like
yeah.
he would answer them because he knew that it benefited everybody.
Right.
And I think that's such a gift. You know, I had a college
gift.
Roommate who was going through her own trauma at the same time. Cause I think a lot of times we think, well, I'm going through a hard time. I can't reach out to other people. She was
right.
going through hell and she would just post make me like cheese and Diet Coke. And it would just like a little note. And she'd be like, I can't be there. I'm in the middle of my own trial, but I love you.
But I'm thinking
and
of you.
And here's some cheese and I'm thinking, and like, you know,
yeah.
I remember those moments because they always seem to come on the time where I'm, you know, crying on the bathroom floor and
right.
like, I can't do this anymore. And to go back to like to financially too, I tell everyone you need to have life insurance. I tell everyone
and you need to have more life
have...
insurance than you think.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, and I will say that until the day I die.
Yep.
And, you know, when Christopher, he was going to go on permanent disability, right? Because he couldn't talk anymore. And we were talking about the logistics because I'll tell you, that's a full-time job is being a caregiver to
yeah.
someone who's rapidly declining at an unknown rate.
Yeah.
We knew that our kids needed health insurance, right? And, you know, he had good disability insurance. It was really great with his job. That was one of, you know, the perks of the job. But we were all going to lose insurance. And so I completely changed careers and got a full-time job in order to get benefits.
To get those benefits.
And that, and it was early in the morning, doing an early morning radio show where I had to be like bright and happy. And I remember thinking, this is so funny. I'm a full-time caregiver and taking care of all these five kids. And this is the time that I go back to work, you know, full-time.
Right.
Like a little bit sooner than I had, you know, I was kind of warming
Not
up to it.
Not according to the original plan.
Yeah, and quit my dream job of hosting Random Acts because I couldn't travel, and happy to be able to take that burden off. And it ended up being such a great blessing because I would go to work early in the morning and get back early enough before Christopher woke up. And then I'd come home from work and be able to get him up, get him dressed, get him fed, and do his stretches and stuff like that, which would take a couple of hours. And then the kids would come home from school. Like, it just the craziest, most intense schedule, but it was such a blessing for our family that our needs were taken care of. We just had to hustle a little bit more. And when he died, I was so shocked about how used we had come to that schedule.
Right.
Of just, I was just like, what do people do?
This
like
is
with
what
their
fills
hands
your time.
And, like, yeah. And the grief, I feel like being that busy and being that focused on such physical hard labor really helped us enjoy and appreciate each like little moment because I could be there for all of them. And I'm really grateful for that. And so I feel like if people are going through like intense caregiving or someone else is, just like being able to help them do that physically and taking some of that burden off physically is,
right,
is such a huge, huge component of it that we don't normally talk about.
So. Exhausting on so many levels. Lisa, this is all amazing and heartbreaking, but also inspiring. We're going to take one more break and come back and have you teach us a little more about what you have learned and are continuing to learn about resilience. We'll be right back.
If you are looking for the warmest office blanket to cuddle up by the fire, you should consider Minky Couture.
We are so pleased to have Minky Couture as a sponsor of our show, Relentlessly Resilient. With the most indulgent and highest quality you'll ever find, we know you will love them just as much as we do.
I have over a dozen.
And I have one in each of mine and my kids' rooms, but I also give them out as gifts all the time.
Seriously, it's like giving somebody a hug that they can have anytime they need one.
What I love about Minky Couture is there's not just one style of amazing blanket, there are several. You have the kind of stretchy, the big, the little, the thicker, the thinner. You can have it with the satiny edges or just the soft middle. Whichever type of cuddle up you enjoy the most, they have one for you, and you can check them all out in their stores. There are six of them here in Utah.
Treat yourself or a loved one to the gift of comfort today. Visit them in store or online at minkycouture.com.
All right, Lisa, we could talk for hours about the lessons
Sorry,
learned.
I keep going
I'm the same way. And I love this because I'm hearing in you all the people that have helped you, all the people that have loved, that have cared, that you crying on the bathroom floor and then a friend reaches out with such a seemingly small offering. I think sometimes we want to help each other by solving each other's problems. And we don't realize that maybe just a text message or some cheese through Postmates would deliver the message, even though we can't give the solution. Can you tell us a little bit about what resilience looks like to you and maybe how your concept of resilience has changed over the last 5 years?
That's a really good question because I have changed my definition of resilience. I really feel like the people who are the most resilient are reluctantly so. They didn't want to be. And, you know, there isn't one formula for everyone to be resilient. I really just feel like it is moving forward and being able to accept what life is in the moment. And it's a lot harder than it looks. I think you can fake resiliency, which is kind of a dangerous thing. But I really feel like it is moving in a forward direction.
Yeah, it is terribly dangerous to fake it because eventually you can't fake it any longer. And that's when you get into danger.
You can't escape it.
Yeah, you can't escape it. So it is true. One of the things we talk about on the show, and actually it's one of the first tools of resiliency is to name and state clearly the issue, to be able to face it and see it for what it is. And it sounds to me like your husband had a really clear ability to do that.
He did. Yeah. And it was a gift to us. Because the hard part for me, take care of Chris. Easy. Make him laugh. Give him the best care. Try to anticipate his needs. Laugh with him. Give him as many, you know, quote unquote, normal days as possible. Live in the moment. Focus and do it. You bet. Because he was right there. Like, I will outwork, outorganize, you know, anyone. When he was gone, that's when I had to learn my hard truths by myself.
I've recently had some friends reach out to me that have lost loved ones who they have also been a caregiver. One who was a caregiver of a child for over 27 years. And they said, I know you know what I'm going through. Well, I only cared for my husband 22 months. That was at the point that my husband died. The morning before he died, I went to lunch with somebody and I said, I can't bear this another day. I'm exhausted. I was doing 24-hour cares with him every hour, medications with him every 24 hours, every hour. Like, you just don't sleep. You set the alarm and you get up and you are like a robot and you do the next med. And it's exhausting. And I remember those. I hear the anxiety and the weight of that grief when they're gone. I hear it in your voice. It triggers a memory so visceral in my body of, oh my gosh, he actually died. Well, crud, what do I do tomorrow? And
what do you do?
All you're left with is a lot of time that you poured into your loved one in total service. And there's nothing more rewarding than service. So you go from complete service to nothing, and you also have grief and all of these other things. It's not like you can go, well, I'll just go find somebody else to serve, because you really need to learn how to serve yourself at that point, which becomes, I feel that was challenging for me. I struggled.
That was challenging for me as well. That was my experience as well.
Yeah. It took me months to figure out that what I'm not doing is self-care for myself, and I'm not going to get better until I start serving myself. And that was the hardest thing for me to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can relate to that.
I hear it. I hear it in your voice. I hear the love that you have for this man. When you talk about him, it's like he's here, and you can hear the total admiration and love that you have for him. Is beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Oh, thanks for saying that. I do. He is, you know, worthy of it. He, you know, he was dying and he said, I don't worry about me. I'm going to be okay. I don't worry about the kids. Because he was so complimentary about me as a mother. I know that you will be fierce and that they'll be okay. And, you know, he would just say, I just worry about you. And I said, well, me too. So don't die. And I was like,
look, so let's back this up.
I'm running. I'm staying healthy so that I can lift you. You know, during the pandemic, I had to lift up a grown man and I couldn't do it before. And I figured out a way to do it.
Oh, my gosh.
You know, I figured out a way. I'll take the 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. shift. And my son, Miles, took the 10 p.m. to 10 a.m. shift. And it was the same thing of like feeding him in the feeding tube and checking for breathing and adjusting, you know, scratching his nose, adjusting the CPAP, you know, giving emergency meds. I mean, turning him over every little tiny thing. And, and then it all goes away one day. And with your grief, it felt so, devastating in a way that people were like, not to be rude, but aren't you a little relieved? You know, you get your life back. Mm. And I just thought, no, my life is gone.
My
now.
Life just went.
You know, my life just went.
My life
with
just
all
went.
These hopes and dreams. Because there's always that sliver of hope, right? Like, oh, he'll be the one that has.
We can be the exception.
I'll think about that later. We'll be the exception. The one that has a slower progression. The one that lives. And then it comes to that. Yeah.
The reality.
And, you know, we're coming up on the reality of it, of the second anniversary of those hard conversations.
Which is still so brand new, Lisa, second anniversary. Wow.
Yeah.
I know we're coming up on our fourth, and it seems new on some levels.
And some days it feels more new than it did in the beginning, because in the beginning you're kind of a bit in a fog. And then the newness
comes later.
That's so funny
because I tell everyone, I don't understand how time works. Time means nothing to me now. Mm-mm. I just am like, because, some days I'll think, wow, that just happened. And then others, I'll think that was a lifetime ago.
A lifetime ago. It's a widow relapse.
Yeah, that was my old life. Yep. Mm. Yeah. It's just that reluctantly.
Lisa, tell us a little, what does your current life look like? What are you doing? How are the children doing? What steps are you taking to continue forward? Hopefully this pandemic is for the most part behind us. You're coming up on 2 years. Can you give us a synopsis of maybe where you are and what new dreams or continuation of former dreams you're still living?
Yeah, my kids are all doing well. They've all been to therapy. We've settled into a good groove, I think, of talking about their dad and not avoiding talking about hard things and also not living in the past and being able to move forward. And that was my obsession, you know, from the very beginning and what I promised Chris. And I am trying really, really hard to honor Chris's requests on what he wanted for me. Because I would always say, you know, when we would talk about the future, I'd say, well, I'm just going to stay in bed and cry all day because I don't care about anything. It's just black. And he's like, I don't know if you're kidding or not. And I said, well, that's funny because I don't know if I'm kidding or not. So how about that? And he would say to me, you don't honor our life together, our love, by being miserable and stopping living. And if that's the
please don't have that
be the legacy of our life together.
And oh my gosh,
or
Lisa.
For our kids.
Yeah.
You know, and he's like, I want you to create more and make more fun movies with your friends and live the life that you want to. I want you to get remarried. I want you to travel. I want you to, like, you need to live life. That is what we're for. And so my life looks like going to work and taking care of my kids. And in the first year, I launched 3 children off. Away from home, which seemed unusually cruel.
Very
right after
cruel.
A pandemic, right after my husband died, and went from, you know,
stop.
7 people living in our house and coming in and out
to three.
And
Lisa.
So that's what my life looks like. So I'm learning how to be, I'm looking forward into what kind of life I want to live and what that might look like. And I feel like that's a huge accomplishment because that I can even hope now or like look forward.
Yeah.
And when I do things like make movies with my friends or have a difficult conversation with one of my kids or, you know, send them off into the world, I feel like Chris would be so proud of me. And so I'm trying to sort of like hang on to those memories instead of trying to live in the past. And so that's kind of how my life looks like. It's just, everything's changed. All my relationships have changed. My job has changed. My church services. I mean, everything has changed.
Everything.
So I'm just trying to keep up and live in the moment because we don't know how long.
We don't know how many moments we get.
We don't. And I want to make my kids and my husband, my late husband, proud. And I feel like that's all has to do with our relationships and how we interact with each other every day.
Oh,
and so I remember that from day to day. You know, I got so many like letters and cards from people that are like, you don't know me, but your husband helped me through a hard time. I just, you know, instant messaged your husband and he really helped me. And he said this and I just be like, of course you did.
Of course he did. That's who he was.
He was sitting in that chair thinking, well, who can I help today? He would say a prayer and then he would email somebody or message somebody. And he's like, the Lord always just showed me somebody I could just, you know, interact with, maybe send a funny video to or call somebody or whatever. Not call because he hated talking on the phone because he couldn't talk. But you know what I mean? Like make a contact. We couldn't have a funeral, but we had, I think, like 15,000 people tune in and watch his funeral on Zoom and send me letters and things. I mean, it was ridiculous. And it was so humbling because I just thought, here is the evidence of a life well lived.
Yeah, absolutely.
That we should all be so lucky to live like that. So that's how I'm going to live. And I'm not going to cry on my bathroom floor all day long.
But some days you can.
But some days I do. Oh.
Lisa, this has been so beautiful, and I'm
not
one of those
funny, and I'm sorry. Yeah. I wanted to be a little bit more charming and like funny.
I love that you can still laugh. You can still laugh through the tears. You know, I feel like that entire, at least the first year, if not first 2 years after my husband died, I felt like I laughed and cried every single day. Every day I would laugh about something and cry about something.
Yeah.
And it was and it was the beauty of being able to do both. And I think right now I'm kind of back in that. I don't know, for whatever reason, I feel like I've widow relapsed to the beginning, but it's good. It's beautiful. I love what you've shared about relationships, about people, about moments, about humor, about love, about service and humility. And Lisa, I just want to say, as one of the many, many people who have admired you and your husband from afar, as only social media allows us to do in 2022, we're proud of you. I'm positive Chris is proud of you, because there are people like me who don't even know you that are so inspired by you. And my heart breaks for you, and I love you. And I think you've taught us so much about the beauty of living in the and of life. It's not or, it's all
and.
And so thank you for joining us today. Thank you for sharing so much of your heart and your laughter. I mean, your voice, your energy. Yeah. It's like talking to Amanda Dixon, right?
Yeah.
You just hear that. You just hear that laugh. You're like, okay, the
thank
world's okay.
You.
The world is awful and the world is okay in the same breath. So
it's both things.
It is both, and it will continue to be. And I look forward to fangirling you for years to come and seeing what beautiful things are next for you on your path you don't
yet
see.
Right back at you.
Well, thank you.
Right back at you. Thank you.
And to all of our listeners, thanks for joining us. We are just grateful that you'll tune in with us each week as we talk about the human capacity to rise above whatever it is we have to rise above. We hope you'll find our podcast on whatever your favorite platform is. Like us, give us a rating and a review. And as you listen to these beautiful stories of resilience, we hope you'll be willing to share yours with us and with our listeners. If you have a story, something that you have lived through that's taught you about resilience and given you tools to move forward and live your best life, please reach out to us. You can find us on social media at Relentlessly Resilient Podcast, or email us directly at rrpodcast@ksl.com.
And remember, whatever you do today, be kind. You have no idea the struggles others are dealing with in their lives. Have a great day.
The murder of two men forces their families to wrestle with impossible questions. Who is forgiveness for? Does everyone deserve a second chance? Follow season 2 of The Letter, Ripple Effect, at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.